Welcome to PsychTech, the psychology and technology podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Josue Cardona, and with me is Kelly Dunlap. Kelly, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing, Josue?
I am fantastic. Fantastic. Because we're going to talk more Black Mirror today.
We are, and I am so excited.
So this is our second Black Mirror episode. So we're going to talk about the second episode called 15 Million Merits.
Yes.
Did you like this episode?
I did. I want to, right out the gate this time, if you haven't seen the episode and you want to, this is a really good point to just stop, pause the podcast, go watch it, and come back, because we will be getting into spoilers. And if you're not familiar with Black Mirror, or you missed out on our very first episode where we talked about National Anthem, which is the first episode of the Black Mirror series, you can always go back and listen to that as well. So just a spoiler warning.
So in case you're not sure, do I want to go and bother and watch this episode?
Yes.
Let me read you the quick Wikipedia synopsis, right? It says, a satire on entertainment shows and our insatiable thirst for distraction, set in a sarcastic version of a future reality. In this world, everyone must cycle on exercise bikes in order to power their surroundings and generate currency called merits. Every day, activities are constantly interrupted by advertisements that cannot be skipped or ignored without financial penalty. Obese people are considered to be second-class citizens and either work as cleaners around the machines, where they receive verbal abuse, or are humiliated on game shows. Do you want to watch that? I would want to watch that.
Well, what's interesting is that I always like reading the synopses, because what I take away from it and what other people take away from it tend to be really different. Because to me, this particular episode was all about gamification and like the dark side of gamification. That was my main takeaway from it.
Yeah, and that's just that description pretty much sets up the first 2 minutes, maybe. You kind of see people living in this, everybody's dressed in gray and everything is very like cookie cutter, right? But futuristic.
Yeah, very sterile environments. The characters live in these small cubes that are like big enough for a single bed and like not much else, like these really, really tiny closet type environments, and all the walls are monitors, like screens, constantly pinging them with, you know, ads or television shows or video games or just this constant media stream in like 360 degrees.
Yeah, and there's no no personalization, right? No individuality. That's the word I was thinking of, right? Because everybody has the same cube, the same setup, again, the same gray clothing. It's just like, even when it starts, you're like, this seems pretty sad. And the main character, he looks very sad when you start seeing his daily life play out. He doesn't even say a word. He's even like slumped down as he's moving from one place to another.
Yeah, I definitely got a sad vibe, but even more than that, I got like the robotic vibe of, this is what I do every day. Like the grind, like it's the face you get when you're grinding in WoW. Like it's that face.
Yeah, pretty much. I didn't want to offend anybody who likes grinding. But
you're weird. I'm just going to say that you're weird.
Fine. That's another conversation.
That's another podcast.
Yeah. So definitely no, doesn't seem like they have, well, they do have choice once they're in front of these screens, sort of.
Yeah, kinda. So, you know, once he comes out of his little cube and he's silent on the elevator down with, like, a couple other people who are dressed in, you know, the sterile gray, and you come out into this, it looks like some kind of futuristic gym where there's all these bikes set up and all the bikes have a screen in front of them and everybody's watching something different. Some are watching the fat-shaming TV shows. Some of them are playing a video game where they chop fat people up. Another ones are, like, the main character is just kind of like a bike simulator. So as he pedals, it looks like he's like an almost not quite 8-bit, but pretty like cartoony environment. And the road in front of him just kind of keeps progressing.
I love the irony of that, right? The commentary on,
yeah,
you're riding a stationary bike and you choose the simulation of riding a bicycle outside.
Yeah.
And it wasn't even like Paperboy, you know, it was just, you know, whether you're doing something, it's just, just on the path, riding my bike.
Yeah. And,
you know. And I mean, I think that's a huge commentary on how, like, we'll play The Sims and we'll clean our house and we'll go to work, and we'd rather do that than actually go to work and do the same thing.
Yeah, we would prefer to be in our virtual world rather than our material world, I guess, for lack of a better term. And so it's this very interesting kind of intro where everybody's, again, you can tell it's super futuristic, whereas the past episode could have been like now. You can tell this one's very future oriented. It's very quiet. It's very, I don't want to say post-apocalyptic because that's the wrong term, but it's a very common idea of the future where everybody kind of dresses the same and it's very regimented and it's very like cog in a wheel kind of feeling, like a brick in the wall. There we go. That's the word I want.
And it's kind of a weird dystopia in that you don't know what happened or why everybody is this way. You're just kind of thrown into this is what life is like here.
Yeah, and even like the cafeteria is incredibly like shiny steel and very sterile, and you get your food out of a vending machine. And yeah, it's the vending machines still don't work though, so that's good to know, because you know there's some consistency in the universe.
You still have to nudge it.
Yes,
and shake it.
You still have to jerry rig the vending machine to get your food.
Yeah.
Or similarly, the idea that the apple is packaged. Like, it's packaged like a bag of chips.
Yeah.
Which I thought was really interesting.
Because it's synthetic. They assume that it's synthetic.
Yeah.
Just like everything else. It's like, we made that. This apple came from a factory, and it was bagged and for freshness and put in the vending machine.
And the really first interaction you see is between the main character and this young woman who kind of catches his attention. And you're maybe like 5 minutes in to an hour show, maybe even longer than that, and you finally have like human interaction and contact. The main character finally speaks, which is, I thought, was really interesting how long they waited for him to actually say anything. For a second, I thought maybe he was mute. Like he couldn't speak in this environment.
And actually what you find out is that he kind of explains in a way that, you know, there's nothing worth, I think he would say there was nothing worth talking about until he met this girl.
Yeah, I wouldn't say life wasn't worth living, because he didn't have any kind of suicidal ideas or anything like that, but it was basically just, like, subsisting. It wasn't living, it was just existing, I guess, is the best way, because you definitely get that feel of apathy from him, that it's just not worth it. You get up, you do your thing, you go home, and that's all there is to life.
Yeah, yeah. And really, he's our main character, Bing, right? And we see everything kind of through his eyes. So I know you had a whole list of things that you wanted to bring up and kind of themes and topics. So which one do you want to touch first?
Well, the gamification aspect really struck me. Like, it like punched me in the face. This idea that, I mean, because right now gamification is really, really popular, that people feel like if they just put achievements and stickers and badges and levels and points, if you can just slap that onto anything, suddenly you have a game or a gamified experience and everybody's going to love it, and that's all you have to do. And that just offends me on so many levels. It's actually kind of hard to process, because from the psychological humanistic level, you're kind of just reducing all of human motivation and cognition to wanting a sticker. And then on the more of the game design level is that games are engaging partially, like the reward levels are important, but that's not all it is. Like, if you took out everything about Skyrim except for the leveling system, it wouldn't be nearly as much fun. So it's kind of offensive to me to just gamify everything. And there's some really current examples about how gamification has gone wrong. Like, if you Google that, you'll find a million examples. The most notable one was, I think it was the Disneyland Resort, where they implemented a gamification system for the laundry team, or like the housekeeping team. And they had these LCD scoreboards, so people who could turn the rooms over the fastest and like got the most done had their name in like green. And then people who were in the lower ranks had their names in red. And it actually got the nickname Electronic Whip, because people felt like there was, you know, an overlord or somebody like cracking the whip over their heads all the time, because they would look up and these panels were everywhere and everybody could see how you were doing. And, you know, for some people that can be motivating, but in the right context. But this was incredibly like exploitative. People felt horrible. You know, they felt like, it, you know, it's not a competition to see who can make the bed the fastest. And yeah, it had some really, really strong backlash.
hey, that sounds like schools and grading and ranking. Are you saying that's bad? Are you saying we shouldn't do that?
I will go on the record as hating standardized testing. I am anti-standardized testing.
A school I worked at had a system where you could choose whether or not parents could see their students rank in the class. And, you know, some parents would get so hung up on that. Like, what do you mean my child is number 7 in your class? Like, how is this possible? Or they used to be number 1 and now they're number 2. What's going on? Not to mention, I mean, the effect that has on the students. Like, yeah. What's to have on, again, the biggest problem that I see with the example that you're giving about the laundry team is, you know, at the very least, you don't want to be the last one, right? For everybody to see that you are the lowest producer or the quote unquote worst employee.
Yeah.
It's horrible.
And the thing is, it's not like, hey, if you meet, you know, if you've got to turn over 5 rooms in 2 hours, it's not like you would be green if you did that. You know, if somebody did 20 rooms in 2 hours and you did the required 5, you would still be in red. So you would be getting like humiliation and shame and punishment for doing what you're expected to do. And that is partially what really broke the system. And that's what this reminded me a lot of was, because again, there's these bikes, and especially the main character of Bing, you get points. You generate credits for as long as you bicycle. And at this point, we don't know why people are bicycling. We just know that they are. And so you can see he's got a ridiculous amount of credits. And it doesn't make him happy. I mean, you can tell that he's got pretty much all the money you could ever want. But it doesn't make him happy. And it's not like he's grinding for points. It's not like he is motivated by those points, at least not at this time. And you can just really see like where the gamification, I guess, falls flat. Like there's nothing enticing about it anymore.
So I also want to go on the record that gamification is a bad word. It's horrible. And most people who are applying game theory to different areas, a lot of people hate that word, but unfortunately it's helpful for the conversation to a certain extent. I think the more we explain this, I think it's the clearer it becomes is it's really important, because people are gonna, you already see it in places and you may not realize it. And it's only gonna get worse. It's gonna get way, way worse. And in that example of the laundry team, I don't know the specifics, but I'm pretty sure that their job sucks.
Yes.
Right? So this is like a very bad attempt at adding an extrinsic value to an activity that has absolutely no intrinsic value.
Yes.
Right. So like they're doing it for a paycheck. It's painful. Like people, like there's diseases. There's all sorts of risks involved in that type of work.
Yeah, it's physically exhausting.
Yeah. 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 And again, I've known people who've gotten sick. I know people who are just, exhausted. They're hurt, back problems, all sorts of stuff. And then, we're going to add stickers to it. So now you're going to love your job, right?
Yeah,
that's going to motivate you.
No,
that's going to change everything. Yeah.
Yeah, so that part made me, I mean, I laughed a lot because I'm like, it's so true. Although I do have to ask Josue, edutainment or gamification? You can only eliminate one. Which one do you choose?
Damn, that's really hard. I'd have to, I think gamification is more harmful.
Really? I would have chosen edutainment.
Yeah, no, I think gamification is worse, bugs me more. Yeah.
So basically the idea of you can't slap a sticker on something, say it's a game, and then expect people to be like super happy doing whatever it is you want them to do. And you can see that in this episode of Black Mirror is that, you know, he's got all these credits and he can buy whatever he wants, including this particular pornographic commercial that continually pops up over and over and over again. And I guess that was kind of the next thing. Not that I'm sure I'll come back to gamification, but that was the other thing that really kind of, it really freaked me out about this episode, is that if he didn't want to watch something, he, you know, had to like pay to remove the ad. and I'm having like thoughts about YouTube ads, you can skip after 5 seconds. Like you have to sit there and watch.
Some, not all of them.
Not all of them. But some of them, and that's now, not in this distant future, but right now. And then what also really creeped me out was there was one where he looked away, like tried to hide his eyes, and the ad stopped and told him that he had to keep watching. And I know that there are, I think, is it TVs, or I think maybe it's a mobile phone that already does that. Like it keeps track of your eye movement and it pauses the screen when you look away, which is supposed to be for, you know, oh, look, I have to look away so I don't want to miss a second of whatever it is I'm watching. But that really drove it home for me of, oh my gosh, can you imagine if ad people could do that? That you couldn't just look away. You couldn't just mute it. You couldn't just fast forward it. Like you had to sit there and watch that ad. It actually reminded me a lot of pop-ups, because it's like up there and it's in your face. And if you want to get rid of it, you have to look at it to get rid of it.
Pop-ups are disgusting. Ugh.
Yeah.
They're so invasive.
So yeah, but
it's like Hulu right now. I use Hulu for all of my current TV watching. And even though I'm paying a subscription, there is no way to skip the commercials.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm watching a show, there's a commercial break, and I see there you're on the second of three ads. And I have to wait until that third ad is done before the show will continue. And I honestly, truly sometimes wish that they had a higher tier. So I would pay more monthly just to be able to skip those commercials. And that's exactly what we're talking about here, right? All those credits that he's, or the merits that he's earning, that Bing is earning in the episode, he can use them. Like you said, the ad comes up, it's like, I don't want to see this. Get out of here. And then it charges you. It actually costs you money to get rid of it. Yeah. Which now in other ways, we do have that option, right? Like Hulu doesn't have that option necessarily, but there are other sites that will eliminate the ads if you're willing to pay a little extra. It's true.
Yeah. And I think about even just like classic television, and this is what gets me, is that, you know, when the TV goes to a television break, I get up, I can go to the bathroom, I can make a sandwich, you know, I usually go on my phone and check Twitter. So like I never am paying attention to the commercials on there. But it's weird because when the distraction is where the ad is, it's a lot harder to do. But I have a really fun example, actually. I'm playing Heyday. I think I mentioned this last podcast too. And it's basically a Farmville kind of thing, and I really enjoy it. And every day it gives you this little movie ticket. And if you click on the movie ticket, it starts playing ads. Now, the benefit is that if you watch the ad, you're guaranteed one diamond, which is like really, really important. You really want diamonds. And then it randomly generates other things that you can use on your farm. Some of them are useful. Some of them are not so useful. But it's kind of this lottery kind of aspect to it. And you can watch, I think, four ads in one day. So what I always do, because I like to put the sound on, cause it's like so happy and jingle belly, and it's really cool. So when the ad, I go to watch the ad, I turn the sound off, I click the ad, and I physically remove the phone. Like I put it away, like arms width away from me, so I don't see it, I don't listen to it. It's like, on principle, I refuse to do this. And then after like 30 seconds or so, I'll come back, click the X, and collect my prize. And I'm like, I'm fighting the man.
If you were in this world of the second episode of Black Mirror, you couldn't do that.
That's right.
The video would stop.
Yeah, that makes
me
really sad.
You have to watch it. Yeah, yeah.
I don't want to watch another game of, what is it called? Game of War, that has Kate Upton, you know, walking around. Will you be my hero?
I've seen so many things for that. Yeah. Oh.
Like, you suck. Go away. And I'm so glad I don't have to watch I would rage quit if, I don't know what I would rage quit, but I would rage quit something if I was forced to watch that every single time it came up.
Yeah, so that was definitely one of those moments where it was just so hard to watch, where he doesn't have enough money to skip the commercial.
Yet.
Yeah, well, I mean, but we're talking about like being able to, covering his eyes, right? So he was like, forget it, I can't afford it, so I'm going to cover my eyes. And then all the screens just go blank. It's like, you know, hey, we're here whenever you're ready.
Yeah, wasn't it like flashing red, like must resume viewing or something like that? And obviously what he was watching was a lot more traumatic, which again we'll get into, than me refusing to watch the iTunes App Store mini game of the day ads. But it's the principle of the thing, gosh darn it.
Damn right.
So, kind of moving along, so there was that aspect of it, and then there's that, like, this actual human aspect of it, which is really cool. The Bing and the girl start to get close, and they start to kind of talk to one another, and they really actually become human. And then Bing discovers that she can sing, which is important because in this universe there's a really important show. Oh goodness, I can't remember the name of it.
Hot Shots.
It's kind of like American Idol, I guess.
Yeah, or, yeah, three judges, talent. It's like X Factor.
Yeah, X Factor or America's Got Talent, something like that, where you go out there and you perform and the judges, you know, they rate you. And then there's, what I thought was really kind of cool is
did you say rate or berate?
Both. Both are possible. And the audience is all virtual. So if anybody ever played 1 versus 100, that's what the audience looks like. And if
that's super obscure. You're going to have to explain. Nobody played 1 versus 100.
I loved 1 versus 100.
Yes, but nobody played it.
So basically the audience is populated with people's avatars. So there's nobody physically there except for the three judges. But there's this huge studio audience, quote unquote, and it's all populated with avatars because the people attached to those avatars are actually watching at home. So again, this technology getting in the way of being physically present somewhere.
Now, this is something interesting because everybody in this world has an avatar that they actually, it's kind of their way to navigate the operating system of everything. And it's the way for them to interact in many ways too.
Yes.
You know, Xbox has had avatars for years. The Wii has avatars. You know, they're physical, you know, the little people that are supposed to represent you in that virtual world. And there, everybody has one.
Yes. Like, you're assigned one. And, like, you can use it to communicate. You know, so at one point, the being and the girl are communicating, and she sends him, like, her little avatar shows up on his screen and, like, hands him something. And, you know, he can send his avatar over to her because they can't physically be in the same space unless they're on the bikes. So yeah, kind of an interesting commentary there.
Yeah. And another way to describe the way that it looks is if you play a sports game like Madden or MLB and you see all of the people outside, you know, none of those people are real. They're all virtual representation, but imagine that each of those people was an actual person.
Yeah. It's attached to a real person watching at home. And the avatars actually reflect that person's movements in real time. So, for example, when there was a character, like, crossing her arms and being grumpy, that's what her avatar looked like. So that was pretty cool. But yeah, so it's this huge stage. You get up there. There's these bright lights. And everybody, like, loves it. It's, like, the most popular show anywhere ever. But it costs something like, what, 15 million merits to be able to go on the show. And so Bing convinces the girl, and again, I can't believe I'm blanking on her name.
Abby.
So Bing.
I have the Wikipedia article right in front of me. Nice. So.
So Bing convinces Abby to go on the show, and he gives her the credits. Like, he gifts it to her. And so he's, like, completely broke. He's maybe got, like, 100 merits left or something. And so they go, and there's this huge line, and everybody's queued and waiting, and, you know, they're just kind of waiting around to get called up, and don't know how long people have actually been waiting there, but there's this huge queue, and Abby gets pulled up, and before she goes on stage, they give her a pill. And I want to know what you think that pill was.
So according to the Wikipedia article, right, I remember what they said. I thought I heard them say compliance.
Yeah.
But apparently it was cup-pliance, compliance in a cup.
Oh, well, that makes even more sense.
So you're asking if it's a representation of anything that we have right now?
Sure. That would be
like
awesome. Like
something that would make them more, what's it called? Not susceptible. What is the word? I can't remember the word.
All I can think of is like sodium pentothal, which is the truth serum. But that's not quite what, because, I mean, basically what it is it lowers your inhibitions and that it makes you more susceptible to influence.
Yeah, that's what I understood that it was too. Not so much that it was, exactly, more suggestible. That's the word I was thinking. I feel like whenever I listen to a podcast and the people are trying to think of something, and I'm yelling at the podcast like I know the answer.
Yes.
I feel like that's the moment I just had. I hope somebody had that. We're like, just suggestibility.
Yeah, because that's definitely what happens. And what is interesting, again, because she's up on stage and she's singing, and what's really interesting to me is that she really seems to be getting across emotionally to people. Like, she's really touching people in a really meaningful way. And the audience begins to kind of kind of turn, I guess. Not in a bad way, but I'm like, oh my gosh, this is real. This is raw. This is a human emotion. This isn't the prepackaged fluff that we normally get. Like, this is actually organic. And then the judges shut her down because I feel like they knew what was happening. Like, they knew that she was speaking to them in a really real way. And the only way for them to kind of continue to be these super powerful people is to be able to be in control of what people are thinking and feeling. And so if that control is going into somebody else's hand, I mean, that's what I felt about that particular part.
Yeah, I didn't see it that way. I saw them as like, you know, the whole audience is out for blood, right? And they want to ridicule people and they want something stupid. They want to laugh. They want to tear people down. And this girl comes in and sings just this beautiful, soft song and everybody just melts. And the way I interpret it, they never explained this, right? But the way I interpret it is, you know what? We have a lot of that already, and that's not really what sells, you know? There's things that people are way more willing to pay for, and we kind of want people to be more excited. We don't need another pop star, kind of, is the impression I got. So it was like, you know what? I think we can make more money off of you because you look pretty, and then if you sing. Like, you're a good singer, but, you know, we can do so much more with you that would be more lucrative, because it seems like these are investments that they're making, yeah, right? Like, they're backing them, like the Shark Tank, something like that.
Yeah, and
that's just the impression I got. So then, so what do they do? Like, they shut her down as a singer, and then what do they do?
They somehow convince her to become a porn star.
Yes, yes. Because apparently, what were the other options? Right? There was like become a pop star and a porn star. Was that it?
Yeah, that was it. Like, there was nothing else. And again, you have to imagine where this girl is coming from, is that her friend, the only friend she's probably ever had, just gave her his life savings for her to be there and for this chance to get out of, you know, the rat race, to get out of the pedal pushing. And of course, she just took the suggestibility pill. So she's not really in her right mind, and she's blinded by the lights, and there's all this influence, and once again, there's the crowd, which is weighing in, and you can see that she's really, really struggling with this decision, because she doesn't want to be on the porn commercials that keep popping up everywhere for everybody, but eventually she gives in, and it's, you know,
And they do give her two choices, right? She can't be a singer. She can either go back to the bicycles and the small room and the gray clothing, or become a porn star. So that's the choice that she's faced with at that moment.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And she goes with it. She becomes a porn star.
Yeah. There's a lot of pressure to do the porn star. Like, it's, well, you could do this, or, you know, look at all this awesome stuff that you could have. And again, between the lights and the peer pressure and the drug of whatever she took, is, you know, it's really hard because she's been really sweet and not something she wanted, but that's where she ends up going, and it really kind of crushes Bing.
You know, something that's really interesting is they never show and they never mention where she came from. Like, what was her life before she ended up there? Because we don't know if this is punishment, if this is some kind of social hierarchy that people are put into. We don't know why anybody is there. And she just kind of shows up and Bing shows her around. And now he doesn't want that for her. So he helps her get to something else.
Yeah.
So we never know. There's never, because that would make a big difference. It's like, well, you know, my old life used to be this. I'd rather maybe be, again, yes, aside from the fact that she is very suggestible at this point and medicated and flashing lights and pressure and all that stuff. But yeah, it's like, you know what? They're offering me a penthouse and I can be famous and I can have money and I can have more than a cubicle. And they kind of run through that kind of stuff. Like, do you want all of that still? Or do you want something better? And yeah, and don't worry, you're beautiful. You are going to be great at it. You're going to be a star. So I have all these promises. Poor Abby.
Yeah, I know. It kind of crushes me. And
Bing is
obviously, you know, and you know, devastated, as you would be, because this girl he's come to care about has just been taken away to go be a porn star. And he knows it's not like her. That's not really in her character. But then they're separated, and the next time he sees her is really traumatic.
Yeah, which is the commercial we were talking about before, which is he usually, when the porn commercials would come, he would usually skip them. But the next time he sees her is an advertisement for her porn movie or channel or whatever it is that she has. And he doesn't want to see it. Like, he is devastated. He's heartbroken. And he doesn't want to see it anymore. So he tries to skip the commercial, and he can't because he's out of merits. He gave her all the merits. Mm-hmm. And that's where we have that scene where he covers his eyes because he doesn't want to see her in that situation. He doesn't want to see her that way. And I mean, and there's also the obvious thing that he really liked her. He had a crush on her.
Yeah.
So now he's going to see her having sex with other people. Like, that was just not what he wanted to do. So when he closed his eyes, the room is just flashing red. And it's like, nope, you can't skip this. Sorry, you don't have the currency to not see this. You have to see this whether you want to or not.
Yeah, that really bothered me. That scene in particular was really troubling to me. The idea that that your choice is gone, that you have to watch something like that or experience something like that because you don't have enough money.
You haven't earned it.
You haven't earned the right to exhibit choice. That really, really bothered me. And I felt terrible for both of them. And he just, but yeah, being just tortured. I don't think there's any other word for it. And you're like, oh my gosh. I don't want to go to the future. Make it stop.
I keep thinking about, like, there's no explanation to why. They do suggest at one point that everybody is on those bicycles every day to create energy.
Yes.
But again, there's no, we don't know what the social hierarchy is. We don't know why those people are in that situation. And it doesn't matter because everything else, all the other commentary is just spot on in your face, commenting on things that are happening right now.
I know one thing that that particular scene made me think of was Facebook relationships. And at the risk of dating myself, Facebook didn't exist when I was in high school. So, like, I didn't get Facebook until I was in college. But my little sister is 7 years younger than me, and she had Facebook when she was in high school. And the difference in our experience was just, it was really kind of shocking because, you know, when you're in that teen and you're dating and you're kind of awkward and you don't really know anything and, you know, you're trying to figure out who you are and who you are to other people. You know, if you had a boyfriend and you broke up, that was it. Like, you were done. You might see them across the lunch table, but you could avoid them. But when my sister went through, you know, she was friends with her boyfriend on Facebook. And then when they broke up, she could still see everything he did. You could see the pictures of him with the girlfriend he had the next day. You know, she could see all everything. And, I mean, people joke about Facebook stalking or whatnot, but the idea that not being able to cut yourself off, not giving yourself that time to heal from a wound like that can be really detrimental to your health.
You know, and you said could, and the truth is you don't have to, but you can, right? If you want to just look over and see what your ex is doing, that information is available to you. And it's really hard to exhibit some self-control because just doing that is not going to be healthy. It's not going to feel good.
Well, and on top of that, talking about commercials that you can't get away from, you know, stuff will populate in your timeline based on what Facebook thinks you want or thinks you like. So you could see something that your ex is doing even after you unfriend him, because maybe he's the friend of a friend and Facebook thinks you want to know about this awesome party that he's hosting. Or because you two went and saw a particular movie together, maybe Facebook gives you an ad for that movie. And again, it just kind of can stir and ignite all these feelings that pre-Facebook you could kind of put on a shelf and come back to when you're at a better point, at a more stable point.
But or go through more trouble to find it.
Yeah, you have, like, to just look back and reflect. And whereas this, just like poor Bing, it is in your face and you can't really look away even if you want to.
Yeah, yeah. Ugh, that scene. Ugh.
Yeah.
And the way he reacts to it, just a kind of a plot point that happens there is that he starts bashing his head against some of the screens. to try to make it stop. Like, he does not want to see it. He does not, like, once he opens his eyes and he's hearing it happen and he can kind of see it in his peripheral vision, he just he starts banging his head against the wall, and then he kind of shatters one of the screens, and he picks up a piece of glass, and then he kind of gets an idea, something to do with it. So he hides it. And then, is there anything else you want to touch on this, or do you want to go?
I guess the last thing I wanted to touch on is like you're saying, he broke the glass, and that to me was really symbolic of what was next to come, like kind of foreshadowing of breaking the fourth wall, or not the fourth wall, that's a different thing entirely, but breaking the wall, breaking through the screen to get to something that's real.
And so I guess, yeah, he wants to, yeah, I guess I didn't see it that way. Yeah, that's a good, that's some good insight, Dylan. Yeah.
Woo, me.
Because then he says, okay, I'm going to do something about this.
Yeah,
so
I
then,
want vengeance.
For the first time, yeah, so for the first time in the episode, well, when he met Abby, he seemed alive. But now he had a reason. He already had all the credits. He inherited them. He really didn't even need to work for them. So he gave them away. They meant nothing to him. And now, for the first time, he has no credits and he wants the credits. He has this intrinsic motivation to do all of this crap. And so he goes and he starts training really hard, and he starts doing things to collect that amount of money again so that he can go to the show.
Yeah, so and, he can get back in.
Yep, yep, so he can get back to that situation. And so I thought that he wanted to kill the judges, or at least one of them, with the shard of glass that he was hiding. That's what I thought he was going to do.
I thought he was going to go free Abby. But we were both wrong, so...
Yes, we were both wrong. Yeah.
It's a sign of a good show when you can't predict what's going to happen.
Yeah. And so he goes and he has this intense dance routine. And right in the middle of it, he kind of just brings out this blade. And he doesn't do either of the things we thought. He kind of puts it up against his own neck and threatens to kill himself. But he says, first, I want to say my piece. You know? And then he gives... Go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, I thought it was interesting that... At this point, it might be kind of like the previous episode where having all eyes on you can be a bad thing. Because I feel like the judges had to let him say his piece, because if he did harm himself, I can't imagine the backlash that would come against them. And again, these are the people that we assume are in power. They're the ones who are controlling who moves up in the world and who doesn't. And so, yeah, I was like, wow. The power is kind of reversed here, that the judges really have to let him talk. Otherwise, they're going to have a really hard time maintaining control.
Because of the image of somebody killing themselves on the live TV, I guess?
Yeah, because everybody's wired. You know everybody's watching.
Yeah. Well, now in this case, this is interesting. Because in the first episode, right, in National Anthem, they had to show the act on live television. And they couldn't. They had to broadcast it, and then it was up to people to turn it on or off. But here, because of that virtual layer, they could have actually shut it off. They could have cut it at any point because no one was physically there.
Right.
We just said, like, you can't even skip a commercial unless we let you. So the fact that they're allowing them to watch this is, I think that they are allowing them to watch it. You know, there's no control. They could have. Turn the screens off immediately, but they didn't.
You see the power play come next. So he's up there, he's saying his piece about how nothing in this life is real, and we peddle for nothing, and we peddle away our lives, and, you know, what's the point of all this? Where is love? Where are human emotion? Where is, you know, what makes us human beings? And at the end of his little rant, one of the judges is like, wow, we could really use you. And I think that took being by surprise, because again, here is this powerful person, like, mind is working to figure out how to make this situation work for him.
Really important thing, he kept the cup of compliance that Abby used, so that when he went through, he just showed them the one that he had, and he said, oh, I already had one. So he went in not medicated, he was not drugged.
Yeah, clear-headed.
Yeah, sort of, kind of.
Rage, I guess. Rage might have been clouding his judgment.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and when the judge says that, right, he comes up and it's like, it looks like he wants to applaud him, right? Like, Bing just told him essentially, like, you are horrible people. What you're doing to us is stupid. And to all the people out there, why are we doing what we're doing? There's no point to it all.
Vive la résistance.
Yeah, and the judge is like, wow, like, that's the most passionate I've ever seen anybody. That was so good. Kind of like, wow, you managed to entertain me. Mm-hmm. Or, wow, you managed to touch on some emotion that nobody's touched on in a while. Mm-hmm. Do you want a YouTube channel? Is essentially what he tells him.
Yeah, basically, do you want your own channel? And again, for me, the concept is one of control. Like, because otherwise you're going to continue to, well, either kill yourself, which is bad for the judges, or you're going to continue to spread this kind of nasty insurgent or insurrectionist kind of rebellion. And the best way to nip that in the bud is to bring you into the fold. You never have to bike again. You know, you never have to worry about credits again.
So the way I see it is that Bing turned into a angry YouTube commenter.
Yeah.
And instead of turning off the comments, they were like, you know what? Part of what you're saying, like, this is just like, again, more entertainment. And I think a lot of people would enjoy having that around, because I think they have so much control. I don't think that Bing put them at a standstill at all. Because I think, again, with that virtual layer, the moment he took out that that blade and put it up against his neck, they could have cut the feed. He could have killed himself. Nobody would have known, and they could have denied the whole thing. Nobody really knows each other. Bing only knew like 20 other people, right? Because they're all like self-contained in these little cubicles.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't have mattered. And it just seems like taking something like it's just exploitation. Like, just like, hey, Abby, you want to sing? That's okay. But really, we'd rather, instead of exploiting your voice, we'd rather exploit your body. So we're going to put you in porn. And like, Bing, you came in here dancing. You did this. You wanted to do this. But you know what? Really, we control everything. So instead, guess what? We're going to give you a half-hour show, and you're going to entertain some people. And I think it'll be a good change of pace. People love the extremes, right? People will love to just see a guy, again, the raging YouTube commenter.
I think
so. Do that.
What else was an interesting kind of commentary for me was the idea of taking something serious and then turning it into entertainment. You know, the idea that if we bring him into the fold and we give him this time and we brand it as entertainment, then nobody's going to take him seriously. Nobody's actually going to think that this is not an act. Like, again, sowing the seeds of rebellion or anything like that, because again, that's every ruler's fear, is because all the people have to do is get off their bikes and they're all screwed. But of course, they don't want the masses to know that. So by putting him in like an entertainment situation, people take it as entertainment and not as something serious or not as something to contemplate, which I think is so interesting, because I feel like at least the most powerful news and information disseminators right now are entertainment. Like Jon Stewart in formerly Colbert, and John Oliver's Last Week Tonight. Like the ability to deliver news in an entertaining and upbeat way is how a large proportion of people get their news. And that's not a bad thing, but I guess that's just what kind of came to mind. I don't know if that actually jives or not, but I was like, okay, well, yeah, it didn't work out for Bing. I mean, he obviously is he's now a shill. He's a tool living in a large mansion, doing these rants with the blade at his neck, you know, every week while living in luxury.
Yeah, it became a shtick, right? Now it's his gimmick.
Yeah.
I mean, while you were saying that, it reminded me of, like, taking something serious and just making it not serious. It's like if someone took, like, some sort of activism or, like, Occupy Wall Street or something like that and made it into a reality TV show. It would, like, and then you just show, like, the stupid parts, and then you show what you want to show, and then you make it entertainment, and you kind of nullify what the person was trying to say to a certain extent. Even, I don't know, like, I got an idea like that. Like, again, just, yeah, let's take this really passionate, really real thing. Again, his thing was about, you know, having something real in this world where nothing is real. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, he agreed to it, and then he's got his channel, and he keeps really what he's doing now, he's just ranting. He has a half hour rant, like once a week or twice a week or something like that. I think it was what they gave him in exchange for material goods, right? Yeah. Like a.
And I like you mentioned, he didn't take the compliance. So whereas I think it strongly indicated that Abby was coerced, not that there wasn't any pressure on Bing, but he didn't have that drug. He wasn't as suggestible. So I think that's an interesting, I don't even know what it means necessarily, but that he was willing to take the material wealth with a clear head, whereas Abby took a different route. And every time you see her after that, she looks like she's in a drugged out state.
Yes. Yes. Always. Yep. Like she's always taking, needs to take something in order to comply because she won't do it otherwise.
Yeah. Which is really depressing.
Yeah. And then I guess Bing gets to do what he wants, which is to just stick it to the man and say what he feels.
But in a safe way, because nobody believes it's serious.
Yeah, exactly. Like even if some people do, I mean, again, there is so much control over everybody that they're, so what if he would have like become a martyr or something if he would have killed himself on screen, maybe, and they showed it. But now instead he gets to talk every week, do his rant. Like what satisfaction do you think, or what do you think his reason was to, or do you think he fulfilled his purpose in getting the 15 million merits and going in and coming back on the show?
It's so hard because I feel like it's a totally different character from who we met in the beginning to who started kicking butt to who like just caved in. I feel like it's kind of a commentary about celebrity and how the fame and the fortune and the lights can really blindside people to do things that they never thought they would, which is a really common human thing. Like, oh, I would never, you know, if I was, you know, in that company, I would have reported that, or, you know, no, I never would have done something like that. Or of course I would have helped that person on the street. And we have these ideas of ourselves as being these really strong moral creatures. And then when you're put in that situation, especially if there's external pressure applied, we tend to not be as moral as we hope we would be.
Well, I kind of see it as they want to, like he wanted to, again, say his piece, comment on things. And they just said, instead of them, like oftentimes, right, like we get ourselves all riled up. We believe in our mind. We have this picture of what's going to happen. So we ruminate on it and we think about it and we get, this is why we get scared. This is why we get, this is why a lot of anxieties come up. This is why we get very angry, because we imagine these horrible, horrible outcomes, right? So then he's coming in, he's going to do his thing. And instead of, you know, a revolt or one of the judges attacking him or the judges even seeming offended, they're like, man, that was a good rant. You want to rant? We'll let you rant all the time. No problem. Let's go for it. And it's like, wait, what? You know, how often has that happened where you go into a situation, you think you have every single scenario mapped out. Like, I got plans for A, B through Z. I'm ready to go. And then something happens that just like, that's not what I, well, I did come here to do that. So I guess, yeah, okay. Yeah, I guess I will. Yeah, I am going to rant all the time. That's what I'm going to do. And then he finds himself in this weird spot. And when we see him at the end, he's doing his rant. He's kind of saying the same type of thing. But then it doesn't make any sense anymore.
Yeah.
Because he's up on, literally in a penthouse, right? He is now speaking to people and he is not one of them anymore. So what he says doesn't really resonate.
Yeah, and people who tuned in, because they even showed like back down in the cycling area where one of his friends or cycling buddies tuned in and watched him and was like smiling and laughing. Like what Bing was saying was funny or as entertaining as the show where they chop up fat people, which is also all kinds of horrible. And but yeah, then he walks away from his little... Oh, and I think what's really interesting is they frame it like he still is in his little cube. Like, the frame of the camera makes it look like he is in his cube, like, fighting for the man. And then it pans out, and you see he's in this massive white penthouse suite. And instead of ads, he has just Florida-to-ceiling, like, vista scapes and things like that. And I guess that just made me really sad because I feel like the being from the start of the show would not have made that decision. But the one who became pissed off and fueled by hatred and anger and vengeance, the dark side, are they? You know, he changed and it changed him. That experience changed him. And then he became somebody who he wasn't. And I don't think you would have predicted he would become at the start of the show.
Cool stuff I read about that last scene. One, did he trade his little box for a bigger box?
Oh, dun, ooh. Dun, dun.
And that big, so they imply that the reason why people are cycling is for energy production. So even though they don't say it, I thought, well, that the world must be screwed, right?
Yeah.
So there must be, like, again, full ugly dystopia outside. And then when you see him look out through his window, there's just like this never-ending forest.
See, but, I thought that was a projection. I didn't think
exactly,
it was actually.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly. Yeah, I'm not sure. Because it looked, it's almost like if it was a projection, then it's like, ha, look what you get. You get more not real stuff.
Yeah, you got a bigger box.
Exactly. But if it is real, and that is actually what's out there, then they're just, that adds to the idea that they're exploiting all those people who are cycling to provide energy to the entertainers or the rich people, the politicians, whoever it is that's in control.
Yeah, I think that's definitely one of the takeaway messages is that the proletariat, the underclass work their entire lives and labor and sweat to provide for the 1%. Like, I feel like that is the take-home message, and that if you want to scale from the proletariat to the upper crust, you probably have to lose your soul in some way, whether it's by buying into the idea that, hey, I'll do a rant twice a week and I don't really care about the message anymore because I'm no longer in that small box. Or it's, I'm going to be drugged out of my mind so I can get through this particular incident and not live in my box anymore. And it wasn't really my choice, but it kind of happened anyway.
That's some serious social commentary right there. Again, on behalf of Black Mirror, right? We're kind of just internalizing it and processing it. But the show, man, this show... She's so good.
It hits on so many levels. Like, we started thinking about the psychological and the technological integration. But then, again, nothing's in a vacuum. So, of course, there's societal. And, of course, there's social. And, of course, there's all these other things that influence how the show takes shape. And the reflection on people as people. So, you know, even though the show is kind of billed as the tech-savvy Twilight Zone, I feel like most of the drama, or at least so far in these two episodes, pretty much all of the drama that occurs, even with all the technology, it's still person to person. You know, driving home the idea that it's not the technology that's good or bad, it's how we use it and how we interact with it as humans. And I feel like that's really powerful too, that it's, even with all this crap going on, it's still the people making other people miserable.
Yeah. I think that before we wrap up, we need to, there's more to say about the gamification part. Just like we painted it as only being, I said gamification.
Yeah, you did.
As only being, right, as adding these extrinsic values, these stickers, these badges, to things as completely negative. And I don't think that they're completely negative. I think that they're implemented in a very shallow and unhealthy way in many things. And there's also the idea that in this world in particular, like right now I can get badges and merits and points for doing tons of stuff or stickers, like you said. But those stickers aren't, I can't do anything with those stickers, mm-hmm. right? And in this world, those stickers do have value. Like they have that's a currency, right? And right now there are certain badges like that do have... They don't have necessarily a monetary currency, but they do have like a social currency. Like my gamer score is this much and my trophy level is this much, or I have, you know, I'm at this level in this game. So that maybe means something to some people, but to other people it doesn't. It's like, what are the thoughts about that did you have from the show, which I'm sure was a lot?
Well, it's tough because I'm not an achievement hunter. I am not a badge collector. I have no interest in like 100%ing things. So I know you're very different. I know that you,
yeah,
you are a trophy hunter and a game score aficionado. And
I listen to Audible, right? Audible books all the time. I'm always listening to at least one or two books. And now they added a badge system. And it's ridiculous. Like, to reach the next level on my Audible app, I need to listen to about 200 hours more of books. And I actually kind of care.
See, I'm the complete opposite. I do not have Pokemon syndrome. I do not have to catch them all. And I think that's a big difference. You know, for example, some people, Foursquare is a really great example. There are literally like hundreds of badges, and there's so many that they don't mean anything. At least not to me from the outside. And I don't care. Like, if I'm going to do something and I'm going to enjoy it, then I'm going to enjoy it. I don't need a badge to do it. But typically, those kinds of ideas work when whatever the task is something that's not particularly enjoyable or something that you would intrinsically find value in. Whereas if there's something that you have intrinsic value, so that the motivation to do it comes from inside, then that's awesome. But I think a really good example is I really hate working out. I hate it with a passion. But I do Dance Central as much as I physically can because I enjoy the activity. So you could say, hey, you know, Kelly, I'm going to give you badges and points if you go to the gym two times or three times this week, or you can just play Dance Central. And I'm just going to go play Dance Central because that is something that I internally enjoy doing. And I can't be bought unless it's cookie or cupcake day. And then I am all yours.
So in the Dance Central example, for example, that's a game that gives you trophies or achievements. I'm not saying this has happened yet, because Dance Central is pretty awesome. But if I start getting, like, even if I liked it, at one point I might say, hey, I'm going to get all the trophies, all the achievements. And then people care whether, you know, it's important to differentiate between achievements and trophies.
Yes. Yeah. Watch yourself, PlayStation
yes,
boy.
Yes, I'm sorry. So if I might get to a point where I get all of the achievements and then I no longer want to play. Because that extra layer of it
is gone
for me. And it's so weird how that's where the balance is. That's where, and I mean, I know that game companies and all companies are kind of falling into that trap. Like, okay, if there's only this much, like you mentioned Pokemon syndrome, like collecting them all, right? Well, maybe once you collect them all, you're like, all right, now I'm done with the game. That added an extra layer to it. It was a lot of fun for me. I like the collecting. I like finding it. I'm done. But there are other games that just kind of go on forever, and you're always improving and always getting to a next level. You know, they raise the level cap, and it's like, oh, I did have 100%. Now I don't have 100% anymore. I have to do it. And there's this balance of how much is too much. Because to me, it does affect me. It does affect the way I play games. I want to see all the trophies. Mm-hmm. And for me, it's fun. I only want a 100% a game that I really, really like. That I'm like, man, this game, I love this game. I want to milk it for everything it's worth. I want to get every single trophy or achievement possible. And I've only done that a few times just because it's like an extra challenge on top of the content that's there. But then how do you do that with... I don't remember why I always keep coming to this example. There was an article I read years ago that talked about how companies could give you points for buying or for like brushing your teeth or doing things like that, right? And now I know that sometimes with behavior modification, you might do something like that with kids. But then how does that affect us as adults? Like, if I don't get that extrinsic value, am I going to stop brushing my teeth or taking a shower or things like that, you know?
You sound like my dad. Like, when I was in school, all my friends got paid for their grades. Like, all my friends got like $5 for an A, $4 for a B. I was a straight A student, which I'm sure is just shocking to you. But yeah, so I was like, my dad told me point blank, I'm not rewarding you for doing something you should be doing anyway.
I tell my students that all the time. My students will tell me like, oh, are you proud of me that I did this thing? I was like, are you asking if I feel pride in the fact that you did your assignment? Like, you're supposed to, like, that's what you were supposed to do. Like, they want this additional thing. And I'm like, that's what, like, you earned your grade. Congratulations. You did what you were supposed to do. And you learned something. Like, you want something on top of that? And yeah, I think a lot of kids are in that situation where it's like, well, I mean, it's something like having your teacher, your parent proud of you. Like, there's some intrinsic value to that, but it's also something extra to what it really is. It's like, it's a lesson. It's the idea was for you to learn. It wasn't for you to have all these other things. It's complicated, because I understand how that can help. Like, I think paying somebody for their grades is not, I have mixed feelings about that, mostly negative, but like a parent that doesn't show, like, you know, that they appreciate, I don't know. It's complicated, but sometimes it can be helpful. You know, you don't want to go to med school because that's what your parents wanted. You know, like, that's the extreme of it. But at the same time, it's like, you know what? It kind of helps that my teacher, like, is kind of proud of me that I actually, you know, that I did a good job, maybe. You know, that's like a fine line to walk. So I'm always very, very careful with that. Like, my students are like, why can't you just say one thing or another? But it's like, I try to be very careful with how that affects their behavior.
There's a really, really interesting article. I'll have to see if I can dig it up for the show notes. But what it did is it took rats that enjoyed running on a wheel. Like, the rats were not trying to run on the wheel. They just liked to run on the wheel. They had fun on it. They would eat. They would run on the wheel. And that was it. And then they started to pay the rats for running on the wheel. So, like, for example, if the rat would run on the wheel for, say, 5 seconds, they would give it, like, a really high-value treat. And what happened over time is that the more they rewarded the rat for doing something it enjoyed doing, the rat then would refuse to run on the wheel until it got rewarded. So by rewarding something that is intrinsically motivating, by rewarding something that is already motivational, you take away that internal motivation and you place it outside. So, you know, for my great example, for me, getting A's was intrinsically motivating. I was really proud of myself for doing well. And yeah, I think that if I had been given an external reward, like money or something, that maybe that would have diminished, or I would have come to expect the money. And then, like, you're exactly right. What would happen if the money went away? What happened when I went to college and nobody was going to pay for my grades? And so, yeah, I think that's one thing when you're applying either gamification or reward systems, to just keep in mind that if you're rewarding somebody externally for something they enjoy doing internally, you need to be really, really careful. Because then you can turn, you take play and you turn it into work.
Yeah. Yeah. And I have students who do not, you know, some of them are like, yeah, I love having straight A's. I love, like, learning. And others are like, what do I need to get an A? Because if I don't get an A, my parents are going to kill me. And others are like, well, I want to get a car. And my parents say I can't get a car unless I have all A's. It's like, there's all these different, it's hard to teach when when people have so many different motivators.
Yeah.
It's really hard. And the last point, at least, I want to make is that a lot of this extrinsic stuff, like, why play Heyday, or why play Farmville, or why do I care so much about achievements or progressing in that, in those games? And, you know, it creates, and this is something that I'm sure we'll touch on a lot in the future, but in general, there is this this satisfaction, this feeling of progress and completion that sometimes we don't get in other things in our lives, like our jobs, like dopamine and all that. And you get that from a game, from a $3 game on the App Store, or from something else. And at least in my clinical work, that's something that I weigh a lot. You know, if somebody tells me they're gaming a lot, and they, depending on how they describe how they feel, it's like, oh, well, you're obviously lacking that kind of thing in other areas of your life, and you don't have balance. So that's why it's so dangerous to kind of, like you said, what are we doing, where we're applying these concepts? It can really mess with everything.
Reminds me of my favorite headline ever, which was, "Video games are like cocaine."
That's your favorite headline ever?
That's one of my favorite headlines. It just blatantly says video games are like cocaine, and you read the article and I'm like, no, that's not right. No, that's all kinds of wrong. But
yeah,
but cocaine also makes you feel good temporarily, but I don't recommend it.
Thank you for saying that.
Dr. Kelly Dunlap does not recommend cocaine. You heard it here first.
Is that going to be the title of this episode?
No, okay. It's not.
All right. You can edit it out if you want. this whole conversation.
The power of post-production.
Yeah. All right, so that's all I have to say about this episode, and kind of like that introduction into gamification and why, I keep saying that word, into the application of reward systems and game mechanics and theory into other areas of our lives.
Yeah, there's so much to dive into that. Like, that's such a deep pool of thought and information and science. But I think that's probably going to be it for this episode as it pertains to Black Mirror and peddling your way to success in a larger box.
Yep. So this was Psych Tech, where we talked about Black Mirror, the second episode of the first season called 15 Million Merits. And thank you for listening. My name is Josue Cardona.
I'm Kelly Dunlap.
And we'll see you next time.
See ya.